welcome to NACSW's Podcast of the Month. Our podcast program makes available recordings of a wide variety of NACSW presentations and discussions on topics of particular interest to Christians and social work. Our Podcast of the Month program features a new podcast every 30 days for your listening pleasure. We hope you enjoy today's podcast. I'd like to welcome everyone today to our audio conference entitled Addressing Pornography Through the Church, led by Dr. Kim Cotrola, who is Assistant Professor in the School of Social Work at Baylor University in Waco, Texas. You'll notice at this point that we have muted your phones to start the session so that we can better hear Kim as she begins her session, but there will be intervals throughout today's discussion where we'll open the line so that you can make comments and also ask questions. Ample evidence documents that the pornography industry is alive and well in the U.S. today, with sexually explicit images readily available through a variety of venues. Despite some commonly held misconceptions that pornography is victimless and harmless, research has documented that there are often negative effects resulting from the use of pornography. Most church leaders have traditionally addressed the issues of pornography from a biblical perspective of morality or not at all, although some bodies of faith are developing new strategies to tackle this issue. Opportunities currently exist for social workers to partner with churches to strengthen responses of congregations in dealing with this controversial issue. Just before we begin our session today, let me quickly cover a few important housekeeping items. As I mentioned, for parts of today's session, we'll be using a muting function to eliminate background noise. However, when we do open up the lines, there are approximately 60 callers, so please be aware that any noise in your background will be heard by the other 60 callers. During those times where we have live portions of the conference, please be as aware and sensitive as you can to any background noise in your home or office, again, to keep the level of noise down so we can hear the discussion. Secondly, a reminder that today's call will be recorded so that folks who can't participate in the call will be able to listen in at a later date. Again, it's our obligation to let you know that this session will be recorded and available for others to listen in later on. If at all possible, it will be helpful for you to be online following the PowerPoint presentation that you should have been provided access to when you registered for the audio conference. If for some reason you haven't been able to access this outline, please let me know via email right away at rick@nacsw.org, and I'll send you a copy as an email attachment within the next few minutes so you'll be able to follow that PowerPoint. Kim did just provide us later part of last week an update to her PowerPoint. So again, if you email me, I'll make sure that you have the most current version for your use. And then lastly, during question and answer periods, again with a large group, we ask you to keep your questions and comments crisp and to the point, and that way we can keep the session moving and have everyone have an opportunity to make comments who's interested in doing so. So now without any further ado, I'm delighted to present our speaker, Dr. Kim Cotrola. Kim, it's all yours.
Great. Thanks, Rick. All right. Well, I'm going to start. I do want to say just up front, I don't consider myself an expert on this topic. I consider myself a person who's learning about the extent and the impact, the negative impact that the issue of pornography has in our culture. And there may be some callers on the line who know more about this than me, so I hope that you do participate, you give feedback, you share your expertise so that I can learn from you as well. I also want to say up front that there may be times where language that is used during this particular audio conference may be uncomfortable at times. I try to avoid that as much as possible, but I think when we address any sort of taboo or controversial issue, there may be some discomfort. I do want to just briefly talk about what the objectives of today's session are, and those are we want to look at statistics, what at least we do think exists around this industry. And we want to, hopefully at the end of this, that you are able to verbalize an understanding of the possible harms that are associated with the use of pornography. Hopefully you can identify some practical ways that churches have responded to the issue, and then ways that church leaders and social workers can address the issue through congregations. So hopefully those four things are what I hope you're going to take away today. And so just what is pornography? My assumption is that when I say the word pornography, that some kind of image comes into your mind, something that some form or some image comes to your mind when someone says the word pornography. But it's important for us to realize that pornography is marketed in a variety of products, not just in movies, but in magazines and television shows and phone calls, a.k.a. dial-a-porn. But very importantly, the graphic and the violent content of all pornography is very, very different. And so it's important for us to think about how do we define pornography, what is the definition of pornography, and what are those different forms that pornographic materials can take. According to Merriam-Webster, 2010, pornography is the depiction of erotic behavior, as in pictures or writing, intended to cause sexual excitement. And I think as we go through this discussion, it's important to keep in mind that pornography is intended to excite people. It's intended to draw people in. It's intended to hook people. It's intended to make them consumers of the materials. That is the goal. And a little historical background. During his administration, President Reagan ordered an investigation into the effects of pornography, which resulted in the publication of the Attorney General's Commission on Pornography report. And in that report, the commission noted three distinct categories of pornography. And the first is nonviolent and non-degrading pornographic materials. And in that particular category, people appear to be voluntary participants in somewhat equitable roles in a setting that's devoid of actual or apparent violence or pain. However, the commission noted that even at that time, it was a relatively small proportion of materials that fit into that category. The second form of pornography identified by the commission is nonviolent materials depicting degradation, domination, subordination, or humiliation. And this form of pornography depicts people, usually women, as existing solely for the sexual satisfaction of others, usually men, or that depicts people, again, usually women, in decidedly subordinate roles in their sexual relations with others, or that depicts people engaged in sexual practices that to most people would be considered humiliating. And the commission found this form of pornography at the time to be the most prevalent. And finally, there's the last category, which is sexually violent material, which features actual or unmistakably simulated or unmistakably threatened violence presented in sexually explicit fashion with a predominant focus on the sexually explicit violence. And the commission noted this form of pornography was becoming more readily available at that time. Interestingly, although completed in the 1980s, the findings from recent research confirm that the last two categories are still the most common. A team of researchers in the past, I think this was in 2008, recorded the instances of aggression in 50 of the most rented and best-selling pornographic videos. An overall 94.4% of aggressive acts were targeted at women. But more importantly, 95.5% of the female characters who were the targets of aggression actually expressed enjoyment or had no response at all. And so I think it's important to think about that in terms of when violence is accepted or even seen as pleasurable, how does that impact the person who's viewing that? How does that impact their perception of reality? And then how does that translate into how they then act out actual relationships in the real world? So, Rick, I just want to, if we could just open up just for a minute and just see if there's any reaction to the definition and forms of pornography and in terms of how common really the more violent and
just a logistical question. I printed out the outline on the 1st, on February the 1st. Are you there?
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Yes.
And I'm wondering, are there significant changes in your update?
No, not significant.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, would you please tell me if the difference between the first two and the third is that the first two are voluntary, but the third is not voluntary?
The important thing with the is that it does appear to be voluntary and that there's no violence. They get gradually more violent, and I didn't read all of it, but on the third form, there's a recurring theme that's seen. In that recurring theme, it's a man that makes a sexual advance towards a woman. The woman rebuffs him, and then the woman is raped, or in some other way, the man violently forces himself on the woman. And so there is actual force for sexual assault in the third category.
And just to further clarify, we're not talking at all about child sexual abuse images, right? Or child pornography?
No. Correct. We'll talk a little later about child pornography. If it's pornography, how can it be non-degrading?
It's a great question.
I don't know how to answer that. I think I think part of the way that they decided this was whether or not there was it had to do with the roles and the way that men and women were reacted to each other. And in the first, women appeared to be somewhat equal to the men. All right. I guess, Rick, can we move back? Are we ready?
Okay, Kim, the lines are shut down or muted for you.
Okay, great. Okay, we're going to move now into looking at the actual commercial sex market here in the U.S., and I'm going to acknowledge up front that there is not agreement. When I've been reading the literature and various reports, there's not agreement on how accurate the estimates and the statistics are that we have. There are some who are experts who feel that the numbers are really credible, and I'm sharing them. I'm cautioning you because they do have their critics, but I'm sharing them because it's what we have. And I think I like numbers, and I feel they're important. It helps us sort of put put some teeth around what an industry looks like. In the U.S., pornography is incredibly lucrative. In 2008, it earned $60 billion, which garnered more profits than the NFL, the NBA, and Major League Baseball combined. That sort of helps put that into perspective. The U.S. is one of the largest creators of pornographic videos, creating 150 hardcore videos a week. Every 39 minutes, a new adult video is made here in this country, with the commercial sex industry producing approximately 12,000 pornographic movies every year. And that compares to about 600 that are produced by Hollywood. Americans rent over 800 million pornographic movies annually, and every second, over $3,000 is being spent on pornographic materials, and over 28,000 internet viewers are watching pornography. Over 45 million people visit pornographic websites every month. 47% of families report pornography is a problem in their home. And 57% of pastors say addiction to pornography is one of the most damaging issues in their congregation. In terms of exploitation, despite, and I feel so strongly about the fact that pornography has been glamorized, it's been mainstreamed, and part of that is because now it's so accessible, it's so available, that it's almost become normalized, I feel, in our society, and that gives it downplays the actual experience of the women, and I say primarily women, who are used in the industry. The typical woman in pornography is in her late teens or early 20s. She was likely sexually abused as a child. She's probably addicted to drugs. She's probably homeless or transient, and she's economically desperate. So time after time after time, of the case studies I've read of women in pornography or formerly in pornography, the reason they got in is because they needed the money. They needed the money. It's just such a common theme. One of the reasons I began to look into this issue is I do a lot of work in the area of human trafficking, and we're beginning to see that women in pornography may often be victims of human trafficking. And according to the federal human trafficking statute, if force or coercion is used to compel a woman to engage in a sex act that's filmed for commercial purposes, then it meets the criteria for violating the federal statute. And the interpretation of this law was first used in a bondage and sadomasochism case in which the perpetrator, his name was Glenn Marcus, he filmed the torture of a victim and placed it on its subscription-based website. And I won't give you the grisly details of that case, but the Supreme Court upheld that forced labor and sex trafficking conviction last year, and that really set precedent that women used in pornography can be victims of trafficking. In terms of children and the exploitation of children in child pornography, the U.S. is known for its use of child pornography, with 85% of global sales happening right here. As of 2005, child pornography was a $3 billion industry. In the U.S., over 250 magazines, including minors and sexually explicit acts, are produced every month. And one, it's estimated from between 20 to 25% of all pornographic images contain a child. And it's one of the fastest growing businesses on the internet. Since 1997, the number of child pornography images on the internet is estimated to have increased by 1,500%. 1,500%. In 2002, which that's now quite dated, it was estimated then that 100,000 child pornography websites existed on the internet. In terms of, this was just something I came across that I thought was incredibly interesting. There is a one-year period in which a study was done that looked at arrests in the U.S. For people who had possessed child pornography. And according to the investigators, the majority of those arrested had images of children who had not yet reached puberty. 83% of the perpetrators had pornographic materials that involved children between the ages of 6 and 12. 39% had material involving children between 3 and 5. And 19%, almost a fifth, had images of infants or toddlers under the age of 3. In the study, 91% of the perpetrators were white. 86% were older than 25. Only 3% were younger than 18. 38% were either married or living with their partners. This gives a little glimpse into the profile of some of the consumers. So, Rick, I want to stop there and just see if there's